Hi, I'm Carmen LaBerge. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. It is Monday, October the 22nd. We're going to seek to connect faith to life, reconnect the eternal with the everyday. We're going to try to take the headline news, apply the mind of Christ, and then be sent out into the world as the ambassadors of the kingdom of heaven here in the midst of the kingdoms of this world. So that's my goal. That's what we're here to do. I think that I'm just going to start with the breaking news related to the migrant caravan continuing to march northward toward the United States. As I've been reading headlines this morning, the numbers have been swelling, which is actually the opposite of what normally happens in these annual northern migrations from Central America to the United States. So this actually happens every year. And ordinarily, people from Honduras and El Salvador and Guatemala make their way quietly to the United States through Mexico. And they cross the southern border, some legally, most of them illegally, in order to pursue work here in the United States. And what's happening this year is quite different. The numbers normally fall off as folks head north. And this year, the numbers have swelled pretty dramatically. There's obviously a lot of media fanfare about this. And if you think about the distance that these people are expected to travel, 2,000 miles on foot, even at a good, I don't know, can you walk 20 miles a day? I can't. At 20 miles a day, my math is so bad, but I'm still pretty sure it takes a long time to go 2,000 miles on foot from Central America to the U.S. southern border. And so they got 1,500 miles left of their journey, and yet they full well expect to arrive at the U.S. border prior to the midterm elections, which, by the way, are 2 weeks from tomorrow. So I guess I just lift this up and say, obviously, there's a lot more going on here than just folks who are desperate. And clearly, there's desperation. And so let's be praying for the desperate situation in Central America that would drive people to leave their homes and seek to travel thousands of miles in order to reach the United States. Mexico has not prevented this caravan of migrants from crossing a bridge between Guatemala and Mexico. Thousands of people successfully crossed the border, and so they are now officially in Mexico. The caravan, which began with less than 200 participants over a week ago, has grown significantly. The number as of Sunday was listed at 5,000, according to the Chicago Tribune. As of Monday morning, CNN was reporting that the number had reached 7,500, and those right now on Twitter at noon Central Time are reporting that the numbers are closer to 10,000. Obviously, you know, there are folks are helping. There are obviously folks who are helping make this happen. You don't move this number of people without a support system. And so I think that that's just something that we have to be aware of as we continue to not only watch what's happening, but begin to anticipate how the administration is going to respond. So the president, President Trump, is obviously very clear that these folks are not going to enter the United States illegally. Legal entry, obviously, would be provided to those who qualify for asylum. He is reminding them that they have to qualify for that asylum on the Mexico side of the border. And failing to do that, they will be turned away at the U.S. border. And then he says the U.S. is going to begin, quote, cutting off or substantially reducing foreign aid to Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. And the Mexico president-elect, who is scheduled to take office on December the 1st, is now suggesting that the United States, Canada, and Mexico begin working together to provide some kind of support for these Central American countries, including Mexico, in order that the economic situation and the situation in terms of safety could be radically changed, radically improved, in order that people could thrive in Central America and not be seeking to move from Central America through Mexico into North America. So I think that we might just leave it there in terms of our conversation today. But that's probably news that you need to be aware of and paying attention to. And I, you know, I'm certainly going to pray and hope that this does not turn violent. But accommodating that many people, even as they move through Mexico, is going to be a strain on the communities that they pass through. And so maybe we just consider praying for the people who are seeking to migrate and pray for, obviously, the U.S. Congress to... It's just time. It's time for serious immigration reform. It's obviously important and imperative that our nation's borders be secure, but that also that we have an immigration process and plan that actually works. And I think we're going to be talking more and more about the migration of people away from equatorial lands to places that are less equatorial as we continue to face the kinds of storms that even we've just faced recently here. In the southeastern United States, we think about Hurricane Michael, and we think about, it's only growing. The challenges are only growing in terms of people who live near the equator. And so those of us who live further away from the equator have got to be, we got to have a better plan for the migration of individuals our direction. I know that it would be way back in history for us to remember that, you know, if you happen to be from points north, at some point, those of us from points north migrated south because of a massive change in weather patterns that resulted in northern climates being so cold that we had to move toward the equator. There was a massive migration of people from lands that we now consider northern Europe, and they moved south. People moved south. And so I just think that as we live in a time when people are migrating from equatorial parts of the world to less equatorial parts of the world, both north and south, that we have to think about that there was a point in time when we as northerners moved south to escape changing weather patterns in our day. Okay, let me move from that to another invitation to pray the news. For those of you in Wisconsin, you're certainly aware that Jamie Close is still missing. And so I want to give you, it's not even really an update, it's just a continued call to prayer. It's now been 1 week since 13-year-old Jamie Close went missing from her home in Barron, Wisconsin. The Barron Area School District is holding what's called a gathering of hope tonight at the Riverview Middle School. I expect we will see this covered widely on all of our national media outlets. And the FBI has added Jamie to the list of kidnapped and missing people. I thought this would be a good opportunity today to talk about kids who are missing and often exploited. And so if you're not familiar with missingkids.com, I'd invite you to take a minute today and check it out. You can go to missingkids.com, find out the key facts about missing and exploited children here in the United States. And you can just survey the thousands and thousands and thousands of pictures of kids who are still missing, and some of whom have been missing for a very long time. And so when we're highlighting one story, like the story of Jamie Close, I think we have to remember that there are thousands of families across the United States who are living this particular nightmare. And so I'd like for us to each spend some time today praying for the families of kids who are missing and praying for the kids themselves. If we don't have a soft spot in our hearts for the exploitation of children, I'm not sure how real our humanity is, let alone our Christianity. And so when Jesus says, let the little children come unto me and hinder them not, for to such as these belongs the kingdom of heaven, I think we better remember that Jesus himself has a great fondness for little children. And those who do any harm to them or lead them astray in any way, Jesus is pretty clear, you know, better that you just get a millstone tied around your neck and be thrown into the deeps than deal with the wrath of God in relationship to his little ones. So be praying today in terms of that. The whole kid conversation got me thinking and remembering. If you've never heard the name Nicholas Winton, if you want a good news story, if you want an opportunity to remind yourself of not only the goodness of humanity, but the goodness that can be accomplished in one person's life. If you're not familiar with Sir Nicholas George Winton, he was born in 1909. He died on July 1st, 2015. And he is single-handedly responsible for organizing the rescue of 669 children from Czechoslovakia on the eve of World War II. It's an operation that was later known as the Czech Kindertransport, which is German for children transport. He found homes for these kids. He worked through the laws of his day, which provided for basically kids to be moved under refugee laws. If they had sponsors, if they had somewhere to go. And so he arranged for all of that. And I just want you to just think for a moment, you know, if one guy in Britain, one stockbroker, can sit down at his dining room table and engineer the rescue of 669 kids, all of whose parents, by the way, ultimately died at the hands of the Nazis in death camps. I just want you to think, you know, well, what could I do? You know, I might not be able to save 669 kids, but, you know, could I help one? Could I figure out how to help one? And if each one listening right now helped one, you know, thousands and thousands of kids would be helped. And so I want us to be inspired today to do something, to get off the sidelines and not just get back into the conversations of the day, but do something today that changes the future reality of another person. So let me just encourage you to be mobilized in your efforts today. To make the world different for somebody else. All right, friends, I got to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to be talking about, a headline in the New York Times that has existential implications. Talking about people being defined out of existence, which, by the way, is not possible. But I'm Carmen LaBurge. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and we'll talk about that when we come back. Hey, friends, welcome back. You're listening to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge. Hey, a little shout out right now to our friends in Fargo, the Fargo-Moorhead area. If you can hear us right now, then that means that not only is the Fargo Faith 1200 signal back up, but you might be listening on FM 102.5 in Fargo. That's right. We have a new translator there on the FM side of things, and we're kind of excited about that. So if you happen to be hearing us in the Fargo-Moorhead area, hey, reach out and let us know. You can either call or text us at 877-933-2484 just to say, hey, I'm listening in Fargo-Moorhead, and I can hear you, which means that you might go over and check it out on FM 102.5 if you happen to be in that listening area. It's always fun to add a new signal here at the Faith Radio family. If you're listening online or via streaming, or you're listening via the Faith Radio app all around the world, welcome as well. It's always a joy to gather together. Okay, so let me give you this headline from the New York Times. Now, let me just warn you in advance. Man, this is staggering, right? This is a staggering headline, so I want to sort of warn you in advance. Prepare yourselves. Transgender, which, by the way, has like half of a scare quote. It doesn't have a full set of quote marks. It just has one little quote mark around it. So they clearly mean the word transgender. Transgender could be defined out of existence under the Trump administration. There's three people in the byline: Erica Green, Katie Benner, and Robert Pear. And let me just go ahead and say, this should absolutely be listed as an opinion piece, because this lead paragraph is so full of words that have nothing to do with the way a journalist would actually report on something that, I'm like sending out an alert right now. This is my alert to listeners. You need to be reading with great scrutiny, because even something that is published in a major newspaper in supposedly the news section may well be so full of commentary and opinion that you're just going to have to read with a really strong filter these days. Let me just read the lead. The lead is this: the Trump administration is, here's your first indication that this is not yet news, considering every time you see a word that ends in L-Y, let me just tell you that this adverbs are not something that actually should be used in journalism when you're reporting on something. That's an opinion word, so the word narrowly is going to be added there. So they're considering narrowly defining. Here's a word for you that actually requires definition in the cultural context today. Gender as a biological immutable condition determined by genitalia at birth. Now, here you go. The most drastic move yet. All right. That's a quantitative statement that is not then quantified. The most drastic move yet in a, here you go, government-wide effort to roll back recognitions and protections of transgender people under federal civil rights law. Okay, let me just go ahead and tell you, that is a fabrication. That entire paragraph is an interpretation, and it is not, it's not true. The next paragraph is true. The next paragraph is accurate. Because when it says in the lead paragraph that there's a government-wide effort to roll back recognition and protections of transgender people, quote, under federal civil rights law, they're talking there about changing laws. That's not what this is about at all. This is about the executive branch of the government applying the laws that are on the books. Well, we had a change in the executive level of the government. And if you remember, there was a president whose name was Barack Obama. We now have a different president. His name is Donald Trump. They have different administrations. And so when the Obama administration, quote, this is from the second paragraph, loosened the legal concept of gender in federal programs, that is accurate. That is an accurate statement of reality. The Obama, in a series of decisions by the Obama administration, they loosened the legal concept of gender in federal programs, including education, healthcare, recognizing gender largely as an individual's choice, not determined by sex assigned at birth. The policy prompted fights over bathrooms, dormitories, single-sex programs, and other arenas where gender was once seen as a simple concept. Conservatives, heads up here, Christians, here's where you enter into the New York Times article in the second paragraph, a news piece on transgenderism being defined out of existence. You show up, evangelical Christians, at the end of the second paragraph. Conservatives, especially evangelical Christians, were incensed. Why bring this up? Well, because if you are on social media today and you are paying attention, this is burning it up out there today. There are people screaming about this under a hashtag called We Won't Be Erased. And let me just tell you what's going on here. This is all about Title IX. Title IX are protections that were put in place related to fairness in terms of athletics and non-discrimination related to girls and women. That's what this is about. And so what the federal government is seeking to do is to actually define what historically nobody thought needed definition and now clearly has to be defined. And so the Department of Health and Human Services is trying to figure out how to define terms that now need definition that never needed definition before. And sex discrimination and what does sex mean and who qualifies in terms of protection is what this is all about. And so they're going to, let's say, you know, you're talking about a school and you're talking about who can participate in which sport or who can change clothes in which locker room or who can travel with which traveling team. Now, the Obama administration, because they're still members of that administration speaking about things, Ms. Lehman of the Obama Education Department said in relationship to this proposed definition, quote, "This quite simply negates the humanity of people." I want you to listen to that language. This is intentionally existential language. The headline, transgender could be defined out of existence by Trump administration. Members of the former administration saying that the proposed definition, quote, quite simply negates the humanity of people. Really? Really? That's existential language. And if you're trying to scare people, then yes, you tell them that the government is interested in eliminating them, erasing them. That's not what this is about. This is about how is the government going to rightly administer the laws that have passed. So if you want a different law, then get your congresspeople working on that, because that's who makes the laws in this land. If you want to talk about enforcement and interpretation of the law, well, interpretation of the law, you're going to talk about our court system. You're going to talk about the Supreme Court ultimately. And if you want to talk about enforcement of the law, you're talking about the executive branch. That's the Trump administration. So here you go, friends. This is a conversation about how elections matter. They matter all the way down at the definition of words. Definition of words you didn't think ever needed to be defined. Words like sex. Words like gender. So let's just take that lead paragraph again. The Trump administration is considering narrowly defining gender as a biological immutable condition determined by genitalia at birth, which, by the way, is not at all what the conversation is about, but I'll get back to that. The most drastic move yet in a government-wide effort to roll back recognition and protections of transgender people under federal civil law. Now, how and by whom is gender defined anyway? And is it narrow to define gender as biological and immutable, a reality that's determined by your DNA at birth? Is that an unreasonable definition? And how is using the definition of gender as male and female, XY and XX chromosomes, how is that drastic? And how is that eradicating the reality of someone's humanity? Do those who self-identify as transgender not already enjoy the same protections under federal civil rights laws as everyone else? Yes, in fact, they do. So what is this all really about? Well, again, it's all about Title IX, which are civil rights protections put in place related to sex discrimination. Specifically, we're going to be talking about women competing in collegiate athletics. And we're going to be talking long-term about the implications for Christian colleges and their participation in the NCAA. Those are the kinds of conversations that are going to emerge as this policy conversation continues at the highest levels of our government. And it's going to be happening over the course of the next few months. And so I wanted you to be up to speed on it, especially because today it is fired up in the headlines. Existentialism, or the existential threat. I think that's the conversation that you and I are going to want to be considering. What does it mean that you would have the power to drive something out of existence simply by changing the definition of it? You and I need to understand what this conversation is about, and we need to understand what it's not about. And if you're looking for other headlines that are related to this, just look at what's going on in the world of sports. And the inclusion of men who identify as women, who are competing against biological women, and frankly, you know, they're winning at everything. All right, friends, I got to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm really excited about the conversation that I'm going to have with Aaron Wolf. You recognize his name from Hollywood. He has a new film out called Restoring Tomorrow, and it's personal. It's personal. It's about the Wilshire Boulevard Temple. We'll be right back. Hey, friends, you are listening to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Welcome back. I'm excited to be joined now by Aaron Wolf. You may know him from his work in Hollywood. And he's a director, he's an actor, he's a writer, he's based in L.A. He's got all kinds of accolades that we could list off here, but I'm really interested in you hearing him. He's the co-founder of Howling Wolf Productions, and he's here today to talk about his new film, which is called Restoring Tomorrow. Aaron, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad you didn't go into the accolades, because that's not what this is about. This is about this film and about what we're doing with it, which I think is more important today than ever.
So we love that. So I want you to, let's start with this, because folks who listen to this program on a regular basis, they have heard the rabbi from the Wilshire Boulevard Temple. We have had Steve on this program, and he and I have talked about what it's like to be Jewish in America today and some of the challenges related to that. So what you're going to introduce us to is actually to the Wilshire Boulevard Temple. So why don't you tell us about the temple?
Yeah, the temple is an extraordinary place. And I mean extraordinary for many reasons. One of the biggest is that, and most famous, is that it was built by the Hollywood moguls. I'm talking the Warner Brothers, Louis B. Mayer, Samuel Goldwyn, the original people who started movies. But to me, what's extraordinary about it and what this movie is about is far more than being Jewish. It's far more than one place. It's about my journey back as a young guy to my faith, to my place that matters. And place is just a metaphor for like the soul, the core of who I am. I had drifted away from it. I was living in New York, went to college in New York, and was just not a part of this place that was so important to me. My grandfather was a rabbi there. He was all about interfaith, and one of his closest friends actually was a guy named Royal Vatican, who was a priest. He just passed away a few weeks ago. And when I was growing up, I thought they were brothers when I was a little kid, because they both just talked the same and looked the same. So I actually thought a priest and a rabbi were brothers. And this film is about me. I was drifted far away from my place that matters. And I think an issue that we have, and this film addresses, is we have in our country right now, is people, young people, are drifting away from their place. They're drifting away from their community. They're drifting away from their culture and human-to-human interaction for positivity at a religious institution, at a place of faith, at a place of positivity is incredibly important. And once we lose that, we lose the soul and core of who we are. And in this movie, you see me get very personal about the mistakes I made and how I, in this journey, and I go to many places in the film, not just Wilshire Boulevard Temple, how I come back to it as it's being restored. So I'm being restored and it's being restored at the same time.
I love that. Again, friends, my conversation partner is Aaron Wolf. You can follow him on Twitter and Instagram at The Aaron Wolf. Where's the best place, Aaron, for people to, you know, get a taste of the movie? I found it at Vimeo. Is that where you want people to go?
You can go. There's a bunch of places. I recommend, and this is what's really neat about this film, I recommend going to either our Facebook, which is Restoring Movie, or our Instagram, or just follow me, The Aaron Wolf, and I talk about it all the time as I go on my adventures over the next few weeks. And you can see a trailer on Vimeo. We're ranked, which is really cool. We were ranked number 2 on Apple Trailers for 3 weeks, which were just behind The Avengers, which is was extraordinary because we have the budget or we don't have the magnitude of exposure that has, but people really caught on to the trailers. You can do it there. And then if you go to Fathom Events, Restoring Tomorrow, you just put in your zip code, and that's where you can see where the film is playing near you on November 13th. And what's great about this, and I encourage everyone to go see the trailer on any number of those places, is this is a movie about coming back to your community. And people, when they go and experience it in the movie theater, are creating a community. And you can do a piece of what I did, what I experienced in coming back to my place in a movie theater with strangers, and maybe afterwards go hang out with them, talk to them, create community within the theater, because this Restoring Tomorrow, this movie, it's not for me anymore. It's for you.
So I love that. I live in Nashville, and so the Ryman Auditorium definitely has a Restoring Tomorrow storyline and theme to it. It much like the Wilshire Boulevard Temple, it was almost demolished, and people here actually from the music community were committed to bringing it back to life. But it required the faith community as well, and it required people sort of coming to a place where they began to understand again that it was originally built as a place for the word of God to be declared. It's amazing when you look across our country and across the landscape of our communities, how essential houses of worship of various varieties have been. And many of them, you know, fall into disrepair as people leave those communities. And so I love this idea. I love, I love the way you unfold your own story of restoration with this story. And I love this particular line. I'd love for you to talk about it. What does it mean to you to be a good ancestor while you're still alive?
Yeah, that is a great line. And it's in the film. And what I think it means, or what I learned it meant, because again, this was not what I thought when this whole project started. I had no idea about some of the things that you see and I learned. And being a good ancestor is carrying on the traditions that we are so fortunate to have as from our ancestors. My grandfather escaped Nazi Germany, and he came to the United States. You see this in the film, and you see it. There's a pretty dramatic moment in it about this. And you see that I'm so fortunate to be alive, to be here at all, because of his bravery. And so I will never do a fraction of what he did as a 19-year-old coming over on a ship to America to escape the terrors of Hitler. But what I do want to do is continue his message, which is in this film, so that hopefully I'm, you know, a fraction of as good an ancestor as him, because right now we are living, breathing ancestors for generations to come, for our community, for our family, and for the hope for a better tomorrow.
So I'd love for you to talk about how you feel like this particular movie, Restoring Tomorrow, speaks to, you know, this moment in American history. We live as generationally divided people, politically divided people, sometimes religiously divided people. I get the sense that in this, not only in this film, but, you know, sort of through this project that it's a part of, you are really interested in restoring relationships, not just restoring places. Can you talk about that?
You just nailed it. It has been something that has opened my eyes, and in it, I talk about this. And what's cool is after the film, there's going to be about a 20-minute event where you should follow on Facebook and stay tuned, because there's going to be some really cool announcements about who we're going to have on this, in this discussion, in this after the film panel, very notable people that are of all different places, because I think right now we're living in a moment in time that is very crucial, because everyone's divided. Everyone is divided, and there's fighting on the news, and you know, whether you're a CNN watcher or a Fox News watcher or whatever your place, where everyone's fighting, they just create fights. And I was raised that we don't want to fight. We want to embrace our neighbors, whether we believe in the exact same things as them or not. And this film, that's what my grandfather taught me, because he barely survived Nazi Germany. And so I think right now we're in a crucial moment where we can either start to change that tone and start to embrace people who are different than us, or we can keep fighting. And then what are we? Then I don't think we're being good ancestors. I think the definition of an argument is not to listen. And once you're listening, guess what? You're not having an argument. You're having a conversation. And in this film, once you see it, and I don't want to give away the ending, but once you see it, the end definitely sparks a thought. And then after the film, we're going to have a conversation with people who you would not expect to be in the same room together. And I think it's going to be a unique moment in time, especially right after the election, since the movie, it's November 13th, and it's through Fathom Events. It's going to be a unique moment in time, because I don't think there's anywhere else where you're going to see people of all different types that you wouldn't expect to be together talking about the same idea of community, coming together, about, instead of arguing, about talking the same talk. Because wouldn't it be nicer to see more people smiling than fighting?
Absolutely. So friends, we want to encourage you to go to fathomevents.com. And you can scroll down on that page until you actually see this event, or you can actually just type restoring. You can put the word tomorrow, but actually, if you just type the word restoring in there, it will pop up. November the 13th is the date. And so we want you to engage with this material. We want you to really consider what it's like to be restored in your own faith, for places of faith to be restored, and for you to be restored to those places of faith. And so when we talk about reconnecting the eternal with the everyday here on Connecting Faith and Connecting Faith to Life, this is this should be right up the alley of our listeners, Aaron. So you guys can follow Aaron on Twitter or Instagram at The Aaron Wolf. You can find the movie trailer on Vimeo and Apple. And again, it's at Fathom Events, and we're looking forward to it on the 13th of November. Hey, we've got a couple
Thank
of minutes
you so
left,
much.
Aaron. I'm curious to know, maybe if you'll just share with folks, just at a very personal level, how this project, because you've worked in the film industry a long time. You could work on any project under the sun. But you chose a project that ultimately really changed you. Could you talk about how this project has affected you personally?
Yeah, personally, it changed my life. And how it did that is I was supposed to get married, and the engagement fell off. It got broken off about a month before the wedding. And that's when I met with the rabbi leader, and we started talking, and he knows I'm a filmmaker, so he said, well, to make snippets. Those snippets turned into a feature film. And that feature film now on November 13th is going to be shown around the nation. So it went from something negative that I thought was negative, not getting married and a life that I thought was going in one direction, to something extremely positive that's happening, I think, just at the right time. So my personal strife, if you will, that negative thing that happened turned into a positive. So I think that's a lesson. Every bump in the road actually can turn into something beautiful. And not only is it something beautiful for myself, but it now something beautiful, I hope, for everyone to be able to, in this point in time, go on November 13th with your community and restore your tomorrow. If you're feeling down and out, if you're feeling frustrated, if you're feeling not connected, once you leave the theater and once you see the discussion, again, follow along because you'll see who some of these special guests are going to be that are part of that discussion afterwards. I can guarantee you that you'll at least get a little piece of what I experienced, and then I encourage everyone to write me. I respond to all my direct messages and stuff and engage in conversation, because that's what it's all about. Let's engage in conversation. Let's come together. Let's restore each other's tomorrow so that we can believe in something bigger, have faith, and make the world a better and brighter place.
I love it. Friends, that is Aaron Wolf. You can follow him on Twitter at The Aaron Wolf. Our conversation is about the movie Restoring Tomorrow. It's a universal story of hope. And it really declares the uniqueness of the alternate way. And so if you are in need of restoration personally, if you are interested in the restoration of our culture, this is a redemptive narrative in which you are invited to engage. So it's about reconnecting with community, and we want each and every one of you to be a part of it. So check it out at Fathom Events, and it's on the 13th of November. Aaron, thank you so much for joining us today on Connecting Faith.
Thank you so much. This has been an absolute pleasure, and I can't wait to hear from all your listeners about what they think and how they feel afterwards, because I hope it's going to make the world in a tiny way a better place and make our country feel a little more united.
Amen. Amen. Hey, friends, I got to take one more quick break. When we come back, I'll be making the connecting point. You're listening to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. You hold my head. Hey, friends, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Let's take a moment to make the connecting point. So every Monday morning I get up, and one of the things that I do is I put together what I call the must-read Monday. And it's a list of things that I've been reading over the last few days. I obviously don't have time on air to talk about all of them, so I post them on my ministry website, which is reconnectwithcarmen.com. And I put like a paragraph or some thoughts, some things to reflect on in relationship to all of these various headlines from the last several days. And so one of the headlines that caught my attention this morning was this. It was about what most Americans are actually thinking about, what most Americans are actually focused on. And guess what? It's not It is not what's going on inside the D.C. Beltway. It is actually not. It has nothing to do on many days, under many circumstances, with anything that's being reported on by most of the talking heads on every news station. That's not what most Americans are thinking about. It's not what they're most concerned about. It's not actually what they want their media streams to be filled with. So let me ask you this. What are you thinking about today? What's on your mind? And then how are you thinking about what you're thinking about? If you are, like most Americans, what's going on inside the D.C. Beltway is not top of mind. You're thinking about family schedules, paying the bills, how to negotiate Thanksgiving with multiple family expectations. You're trying to figure out how to manage everything that's on your plate and help your neighbor who has more to bear than they can currently handle. If you're like most of us, you want the people who are being paid by our tax dollars to do their jobs efficiently and effectively and without causing any additional stress to those of us who are just trying to do our jobs and raise our families. We want those who are elected to make and enforce the laws of the land in such a way that our core values are as a nation are upheld. We want the people working for us in government to actually do their jobs. I mean, that's pretty much what most of us want. And we really don't want to hear about it every day. That's according to the newest polling information that's out there. Polls show that most Americans simply want government employees, both elected, appointed, and then those hired into government jobs, to do as much good as possible with the limited resources available to them with our tax dollars, and don't keep raising our taxes with the idea that you should do more. Like, that's what apparently most people want. Apparently, we also don't want them to spend all their time trying to get us to hate their political opponents. We also don't want to see and hear constant ranting. So, I guess my message today to those who have political positions of some variety, either elected or appointed, government jobs of some kind, please just do your job. Do what you were sent by the people to do. And stop filling our social media feeds with childish name calling. So that would be one of the things that grew out of my Must Read Monday exercise, which I do every Monday morning. It also reminded me of something that I talked briefly about last week. But if you missed it, I really want people to be checking out. It's called Hidden Tribes. And it's new research by an organization called More in Common. And if you just Google Hidden Tribes, all the information will come up. And essentially what it communicates is the overwhelming majority of Americans, like overwhelming majority, like 60, well, there's only like 6% on one end and 8% on the other end that are really loud and angry and noisy and always screaming at each other. And everybody else, which, you know, that's only 14%, right? So everybody else is this overwhelming majority of Americans who frankly are just exhausted of all the political rhetoric. And so I think that that gives us as Christians a real opportunity, particularly in the next couple of weeks leading up to the midterms, when frankly every news feed you have is just going to be consumed with probably largely negative information that one side is lobbying against the other or alleging against the other and trying to convince you not to vote for that other person. I'd love to see some positive messaging about why I should vote for somebody, not just negative messaging about why I shouldn't vote for the other person. But I do think that as Christians, that means that we have a responsibility to elevate the positive stories that we're hearing today. We have a responsibility to elevate into the conversation of the day things that help people actually taste and see that the Lord is good, to savor the Savior. And so I want to lift this up to you. This is just an idea for the day, because this caught my attention today, and it was actually in the SRN news at the leadoff to our hour today, was this information about crosses being a part of a memorial for those killed in a Texas school shooting. I'm not sure what stood out to you in this news related to Santa Fe, Texas, that crosses and flowers are a part of a memorial for 10 people who were slain this spring in a shooting at a Texas school. Here's what stood out to me. There was a dedication ceremony on Saturday at Maranatha Christian Center in Santa Fe for the victims. Now I want you to think about this. 10 people were killed in this shooting on May the 18th at Santa Fe High School. And this memorial was established this past weekend. And these are permanent white crosses, each dedicated to a different individual that was slain. And two things stood out to me. First of all, 40 people were in attendance. 10 people died, and 40 people came to the installation of this monument, this memorial, maybe is better said. The other thing that stood out to me is that the memorial is crosses. Crosses and flowers, but, you know, let's focus on crosses here. Do you remember the conversation that we had just a couple of weeks ago about the suit that has been brought by the Freedom from Religion Foundation related to the historic memorial, World War II memorial, known as the Peace Cross in Bladensburg, Maryland? We talked about it fairly recently here on Connecting Faith. Well, come to find out, when families and communities actually seek to heal from loss and trauma, they still turn to the cross. Crosses were just, you know, used as an installation of a memorial this weekend in Santa Fe, Texas, in memory and in celebration of the lives of the 10 who died in the school shooting there. Crosses are a part of the way we do this. Now, while I recognize the difference between a permanent memorial in the shape of a cross on government-owned land, as in the Maryland case, I also recognize the reality that there is strange comfort in the cross, particularly in the cross of Christ. And the Freedom from Religion Foundation is seeking to eliminate that comfort, that hope, from our public consciousness. And so what I want you as a Christian to do today, wherever you are, I want you to see the cross. I want you to see the cross in the window pane. I want you to see the cross in the telephone lines. I want you to see the cross at every intersection. I want you to see the crosswalk. I want you to see the cross ties. Hey, if you're Sharon and you're listening right now, I know that you are homebound. And so I want you to look on your wall and I want you to see the cross stitch. I want you to see the crosswords. And then I want you to avoid crosswords. I want you today to point out the crosses in the landscape to others. Even as people decorate for Halloween, point out the cross and the crossbones. Friends, the cross is powerful. And even if those rise up in our culture to demand that crosses be brought down from, you know, publicly held land, it doesn't mean that we can't put crosses up. It doesn't mean that we can't point out where the cross exists all around us. The cross is powerful, and we are its witnesses in the culture today. So wherever you are, whatever you're doing, I want you to take people to the cross. My grandmother used to hum the old rugged cross. I didn't know when I was little exactly what she was humming. But as I grew up, I recognized the song. And she hummed it over and over and over again. And it is it now lives in my memory in a very secure place that I don't think anything would ever be able to root it out. And that's what I want for the people in the culture. Help them savor the Savior today by pointing out the cross in all of its various forms and in all of the ways that it appears all around us all the time. Take people to the cross today. That's your job as a Christian in the culture. I'm Carmen LaBurge. You're listening to Connecting Faith. You can follow me on Twitter at Carmen LaBurge. You can email me, carmen@myfaithradio.com. Have a great day. God bless. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Connecting Faith. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend to grow the impact of Connecting Faith. Also, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player and never miss a conversation.